Good morning. Over the years, I found that the Beis Din is a very reliable economic indicator. When I first got involved in Dinei Torah, the real estate market back then was booming, and many, if not most, of the Dinei Torah involved Ani Machlik B'Charora, Dinei D'Bar Metzra. Whenever a property went up for sale, everyone was busy fighting and trying to get their hands on it, and that was the standard in Torah. At some point, there was a bit of a shift. The market peaked, and now the issues that came in front of the Beis Din were more cases of Mechusar Amonah, Mishapara, people trying to back out of contracts, people trying to see when they are mechuyev to go through with the deal or not, and that became the norm. Unfortunately, what came next is the most common Dinei Torah today involve Gevias Chayv. People who've borrowed money and they've defaulted on their debt, people who've taken money be'iska and haven't paid it back, and investors are trying to salvage what they can, and that is probably the most common Dinei Torah today. What's interesting is that now, once the economy really hit rock bottom and people went through the Gevias Chayv, there became a new type of Din Torah on Ani Mahapi B'Charara. And these are Dinei Torah that involve foreclosures or selling debt very cheaply. I'm going to give very briefly two examples and then we'll go through some of the halachas. The first story was a Maisa Shehoya, an investor who still had some capital on hand after the crash, went ahead, and what he started doing is he started buying distressed portfolios. He would buy portfolios of loans, many of it was backed by real estate, and he would go ahead and he would foreclose on the loans, and he was interested in the real estate. Now he went ahead, he was quite successful, he bought a whole package. Most of the loans he was able to move forward without any problems to either get paid or work out a deal or foreclose. He had the misfortune of, in this package, one of the loans was owed by a Frum Yid. And as soon as the Frum Yid realized that his new creditor was Jewish, he right away jumped up and started yelling and screaming, "I don't have to pay you. Ani mag b'charara, I have the right to this loan. You can't foreclose." That was the first story. We're going to have to deal with what the halacha is. The second story was a bit on the other end. There were two partners in a project. It was roughly $50 million. And what happened to this project is what happened to many other $50 million real estate projects. It ran into trouble. And the partners stopped making the payments. They were in default. And they sat down one day and they decided that we have to get out of this somehow. So what they decided is, again, depending on which version of the story you believe, but we'll take the most scandalous version. One partner told the other, "You go ahead, you negotiate with the bank, buy off the debt, and then you'll get it at a discount and we'll be able to continue with the project." So the other partner went ahead, he negotiated. This loan, besides being backed by the project, both partners were personally liable as well. And he was ultimately successful in buying it from the bank on pennies on the dollar, 30 cents on the dollar. He pays the $16 to $18 million, whatever it was, and a few days later, the partners sit down to work things out. And his partner tells him, "Okay, let's figure out how we're going to work out, how we're going to move forward with the project." So the gentleman that had bought the loan turns to him and said, "We? What are you talking about? I bought the loan for myself. I paid $18 million. I now own the loan. I'm going to foreclose on the project. And it's going to be all mine. You're going to be out. If you complain about it, then, as you recall, we're both jointly and severally liable for this debt. I'm going to go after you personally for the entire $50 million. Mahadin. So let's begin. The first Maramokoim is the Tshuvas Beis Ephraim Chayshimishvat Simen Nunches that we've gone through today. Beis Ephraim deals with the case of a person had goods, he fell behind on his taxes, and the tax collector seized the goods and sold it in an auction. The original owner then came and claimed it. Zokta Beis Ephraim, the original owner is entitled to get the assets back. Why? So he says, it's because of our sugya, it's because of the sugya of Ani Ma'apid Fecharara. Now, this is not a typical case of Ani Ma'apid Fecharara, as the Beis Ephraim points out himself. There are a number of very big chidushim. The first is that we've spent the past 3 weeks learning about Ani Ma'apid Fecharara. It has an issur. If one person has a deal, another person can come and interfere with it. What happens if a person violates this issur? And he goes ahead and interferes. He grabs the deal. What recourse is there? So, if you look at the Gemara said, that Rav Yitzchak asked Rav Abba, what's the din of Ani Ma'apid Fecharara Bachar V'not L'Mai? So what was his answer? Nikra Rasha. He's called a Rasha. So most of the places are B'dayik, that the only thing that happens is if a person violates his halacha is he's called a rasha. It doesn't say anywhere hagoyzel mechavera, if you steal from your friend nikra rasha. If you steal from your friend, you're a gazlan. Bezdin will take you and force you to give it back. If the Gemara says that an ani mahatech ubacher nadla is nikra rasha, it means that is the only punishment. You're called a rasha. Not just you're called a rasha. The Sma points out Bezdin is supposed to get up and make an announcement. This person is a rasha. Most people are not interested in having such announcements being made about them, and to avoid that, we'll probably give back the property. They'll be mafayis the ani who is mahapach. But if the person refuses, Bezdin cannot force him to return. And that's the sheet of most poskim. The Beis Ephraim argues. Beis Ephraim poskims like the sheet of Rabbeinu Tam that an ani mahapach, if someone takes it shaloi kedin, Bezdin will force him to give it back. And therefore, in this case, the Beis Ephraim says, the person that bought these goods from the tax collector was over on him mahapach, and he has to return it. Now, the Beis Ephraim points out, this approach is k'negad mafurash gemara. In our gemara, what happened? Rav Gidla was mahapach, and now we find out there's a problem. So gemara says, Rav Abba didn't want to sell the field back, because it was the first property that he bought, and it's not considered a good mazel to sell the first property that you bought. Zot the Beis Ephraim, if the din of Ani Mahapach is that if you're over it, you're nikar rasha, but there's no chiyuv to return it, so then we understand it's a bad mazel to sell your first property, so he didn't want to sell it back then. However, if al pi halacha, there's a chiyuv to sell it back, and Bezdin will force the person who took it shaloi kedin to sell it back, how can you start telling me it's not a good mazel to sell your first property? You're doing what you have to do, al pi halacha, what a Bezdin will force you to do. So how could it be, how could Rabbeinu Tam say that if you waver Ani Mahapach, we can force you to sell it back to the first person? Beis Ephraim answers that no. When does Rabbeinu Tam say that if you violate Ani Mahapach, you have to sell it back? That's only when you do it b'mezid. You know the ani is here trying to get the property. You go ahead and you maliciously swoop in, grab the deal. They're over ani mahapach b'mezid. However, in the case of the Gemara, it was b'shoigig. Rav Abba did not know that Rav Gidla was being mahapach. Since it was b'shoigig, he was unaware that anyone was here. That this, the Rabbeinu Tam agrees, there's no chiyuv to give it back. It's a nice thing to do. It's a midas chasidus. That's why Yitaka wanted to give it back. But it's not. But here, everyone would agree, Maker Hadin, there's no chiyuv. Now, this Beis Ephraim is Negei Lahaloch. Even the shittas that hold that by Ani Mahapach, you never have a chiyuv to give it back, which is what we hold the halacha, so how we paskin. Still, the Chemda Shlomo says, even this lower level, that your Nikra Rasha, applies only when you did it b'mezid. Veer Nikra Rasha. However, if it was v'shoigig, if you didn't realize there was someone else here, the Chemda Shlomo says it's not nikar rasha. It's a midas chasidus to give it back, but it's nothing more. You can't say the person did an avla. You certainly can't make any announcements about the person. He acted in good faith. And this is the shita of the Chemda Shlomo. The Erech Shai as well says also passings like this. Well, it's not so simple to rely on these shitas, because there's the Maram, there's the Ranach, and there's Igros Moshe as well, that say even when it's b'shoigig and you did it in good faith, still, once you find out about it, if you don't give it back, you're then Nikra Rasha. Therefore, the halacha you shouldn't be samech on it. But there is such a shita. It's brought down in Pesle Tshuva that b'shoigig might be more kal and it might be different. Now, another interesting nafkamino between this machlokes Rabbeinu Tam and the other shitas, whether ani mahapik we can force you to give it back or not, is what happens, and this is very common. Person is being mahapik, he's negotiating on a piece of property, and he comes to a psikas dam, and they have an agreement. Tells the person, okay, I'll come back tomorrow, we'll sign a contract. Comes back the next day, and the seller tells him it's too late. Someone else came, he made a higher offer, and I gave him the deal. So the first reaction of the buyer is, okay, I want to know who that other person is, because anim hafik b'charar. Is the seller allowed to disclose his name? Zok the Chavetz Chaim, no. It's Lashon Hara. If the halacha would be that you have a tzviya in Beis Din, he has a chiv to give it back to you, that's not Lashon Hara, that's the Tayelis. You have a right to claim it in Beis Din. However, if it's not a chiv, if it's just either a midas chasidus if it's just a midas chasidus, that's not considered l'tayelis, and you would not be able to disclose the name. Now, we mentioned 2 weeks ago that the Rashdam paskins that even though you can't force a person, we paskin not like Rabbeinu Tam, that once a person takes is oivrani ma'apri, you can't force him to give it back. That's after the fact. If he already bought the property, you can't force him to sell it back to you. However, before he closed, he's only going to be considered a rasha when he actually closes and deprives the first person from the property. There the Rashdam says, if a person wants to do an aveira, if a person wants to do something that will make him into a rasha, Beis Din has every right to stop him before the fact from doing an aveira. So in that case, it would come out according to the Rashdam that if you're dealing with before the fact, before the closing, you want to know the person's name because you want to bring him to Beis Din and have the Beis Din stop him from interfering with your deal. It's l'tayelus. He should have a chiyuv. You can bring him to Beis Din, and it would not be nisur lashon hara for the seller to tell the buyer who the other person is. It's only after the fact, if it's already sold, we're here, there's no tzviya in Beis Din, they already you would have to protect the name of the other person, and you'd have no right to disclose it.
How is Rav Gidl allowed to
say this? Excellent. L'chor, you're going to have to say that Rav Gidl knew that Rav Abba would do a midas chasidus. Since he knew he was, even if it was midas chasidus, he would still give it back, that wasn't the nisur lashon hara, it was the tayelus. However, if you're dealing with a normal situation, where you have no reason to believe this other person is going to honor a midas chasidus, if it's not a chiyuv mikra hadin, then you'd have a problem with lashon hara. So that's the first chiddush of the Beis Ephraim. Even though it's after the fact, even though this person already bought the merchandise, you'll have a there's a chiyuv to return it if he's over on imach b'charar. But now there's another problem. We learned from Tosfos that ani mahapich is only when there's a sale, it's a regular price. So we tell this outside person, don't interfere with this person's deal, go down the block, go do another deal. What happens if it's a mitzvah? There's something, there's hefker, it's free, this is the only one available. Tosfos says, no ani mahapich, you can't find it elsewhere. Now the Ramah says, it doesn't apply, this is not only if something's free, if something is a great bargain, it's a great deal, since you can't find this deal elsewhere, it's a din of a mitzvah, no ani mahapich. Now if that's the case, this tax sale, in Beis Ephraim's case, it was a steal of a deal. The tax collector was just selling it off for pennies on the dollar. It was a great deal. And therefore, it was up to Beis Ephraim. How could I say there's only a mahapach? It's a mitzvah. Now, agav, lahalacha today, this argument really won't hold water. Because today, unfortunately, there's nothing unusual about foreclosures. And although a foreclosure may be a great deal, there are hundreds or thousands of other properties that are also in foreclosure, and you can also get a great deal on. So even though it's a good deal, since you can get this good deal elsewhere by going to another foreclosure, this taina will not apply. But anyway, what the Beis Ephraim says is that even though it's a great deal, the Beis Ephraim says is the Shitas HaRamban, which the Shach quotes, that limits this exception, that it's only when it's free, There, there's no any mahapach. If you're, once you're paying for it, we say loy plug. We don't figure out it is a good deal, it isn't a good deal, and across the board, we'll say any mahapach. And that's the second chumrah of the Beis Ephraim. Balacha, he's arguing on the Ramah and many other achroinim. It's a little bit difficult to be mighty moment with this, but this is the shita of the Beis Ephraim. Okay. The Beis Ephraim now has a third and even more basic problem. And that is, the whole Ani Mahapach only applies when there's a meeting of the minds. The buyer and seller have an agreement, make your idea, and it has to be final completely. The Jerusha says a Chiddush that if it's almost, the deal's almost done, that if someone doesn't interfere, it'll be finished shortly, that's also enough for Ani Mahapach. But that you certainly need that there were the negotiations in the advanced stage. In the Beis Ephraim's case, the tax collector auctioned off these goods. Where was the original owner? He wasn't dealing with the tax collector. There was no psikas damim. There's no psikas damim. How in the world do you have ani mahapach b'charar? Zog the Beis Ephraim another chiddush. This whole din that you need a psikas damim, that the deal has to be just about done, isn't a normal case. Property is for sale. You have one buyer who's coming along to buy. You have a second person. They're competing. Neither of them has any schusim. Neither of them has any kinyanim, any rights to the property. So here, unless there is a psikas damim, unless one of them finishes the negotiations, no ani mahapach. However, Zok the Beis Ephraim, in a case where the goods used to belong to me, and they were seized and they're being sold, there the first person has a shaychus to it. He has a connection to it. It was his. If it was his and it's being taken away from him, even if there's no psikas damim, still we're going to apply the din of ani mahapach b'charar. The Beis Ephraim then continues and says, even though I hold this is true, and if you're going to argue with me and say that there's no ani mahapach, if you don't like mechadushim, he says there's another reason. There's halacha if something is stolen after yiyush and shina rishus. If the stolen goods enter someone else's possession, he has no chiyuv to return it. The ziyush, shina rishus, it belongs to him. Nevertheless, the Shach and the Ramah say that if there's a takano or if there's a minhug to return things even that were stolen, even after yiyush and shina rishus, you have to listen to such a minhug, you have to follow the takano. Zok the Beis Ephraim, there's a minhug today that whenever a person loses his house to foreclosure, everyone knows a yid doesn't go ahead and take advantage, and someone goes ahead and buys it and gives it back to the first person. Since there is such a minhag, we don't take advantage of another person's misfortune, that minhag is binding, and you'll have the right to go ahead and force him to sell it back. Now, in that debate, the Ephraim says, wait a second. The case of the Ramon, the Shach, is there's a ganiv. Someone steals something, even though the owner gave up hope, we say, give it back to him. In our case, it was a tax collector. Taxes are owed. Dina malchus adina. So who says that this applies? L'chayra, since the tax collector had the right to seize and had the right to sell it, there should be no takana. So the Beis Ephraim, you're right, dina malchus adina, the tax collector has the right to seize things. But he says, in this case, the tax collector was having a private auction. He was selling it on eBay. The money was not going into the treasury, it was going into his pocket. And since it was going into his pocket, there's no dina malchus adina, the takana will apply, it's like a gazlin, and you'd have a chiyuv to return.
In a case like here, where avoiding it, like you have a restriction, does that say, well, since I don't buy it,
Possibly. There's another shuvah in Divrei Chaim, in Chelik Beisim, in Mem Ches, that addresses that point. I don't know if we'll get to it today. So let's, This is the psak of the Beis Ephraim is, number one, you have ani mahapach b'charar, and even if you don't, number two, you have this takana that if something is lost, even after yiyush and shina rishus, you should give it back. Now, let's go back to the first point of the Beis Ephraim. The Beis Ephraim says it's ani mahapach b'charar. Now, Beis Ephraim points out, how could that be true? There's no psikas damim, there was no final agreement, there were no negotiations between the owner and the seller. So Beis Ephraim says it doesn't make a difference because he had shaychus to it was originally his. Let's go back for a moment. Let's say I own a property and I sell it. I sell it and I get paid. The buyer then goes ahead and decides to sell the property again. Am I going to have Kadima on this property? Probably not. I sold it. It was a legitimate sale. I gave up my rights. Okay, that's the first case. Let's move on to the next case. If a person sells a property, if the property is for sale, and a person puts in a bid, but there's no final agreement, why is there no ani mahapach? Why do you need a psikas damim? So we learned last week from the Mordechai, the reason is because of seyed demeicha. We want to protect the seller. If the halacha was once one person puts in a bid, no one else is allowed to interfere, the seller would lose out. So even if the seller is a goy, the Mordechai says, seyed demeicha, we're concerned, we want to protect commerce, no ani mahapach. In our case, why is this different? The Mishnah has a beautiful argument. That over here, it's not a regular case of ani mahapach. Over here, the owner is losing the goods. Now, I understand that if you want to talk about it's a metzia, and you want to say that the heter of metzia is only there are two parties that have no connection. So even though if it's a metzia, there's no ani mahapach. However, if the item used to belong to me, even though it's a metzia, leave me alone, let me get it. But if we're dealing with psika, the reason why you need a final agreement is to protect the seller. Simply, just because one of the buyers used to own it, why is that a reason to make the seller lose? So l'chayra, although the Beis Ephraim doesn't address this directly, l'chayra you have to say, that just like the Beis Ephraim later in the Tshuva says, this whole sale was a gneva, the tax collector was auctioning it off on his own and keeping the money, wasn't going to the treasury. So it comes out, there's no concept of seyed demeicha. We're worried that the seller is not going to get every dollar in the fair price. The seller is stealing. So in such a case where the seller is acting shalei kedin, there we don't have to protect him. And there the Beis Ephraim has this chiddush that even though there's no final heskim, there's no final agreement, ani mahapach will apply and it'll go to the first person. But it'll come out if this cheshbon is true, that if the seller is legit, then this will not apply. So going halacha l'maisa, if a person borrows money against the property, and the bank, whether it's Jewish or not, makes no difference, forecloses legitimately, and wants to sell it, in this case, we'll have seyed demeicha. If we would apply ani mahapach right away, the seller will lose out, and therefore l'chayra, this halacha should not apply. And it would be limited to the Beis Ephraim's case where the whole thing was done shalei kedin. As the Divrei Chaim in Siman Lamed addresses a case similar to the Beis Ephraim, and he makes a number of interesting points. In the Divrei Chaim's case, what happened is there were two brothers that had the property. It was seized. It was being sold in an auction. And what the brothers did is they went to all the Jewish bidders and they told them, listen, this is our father's property. It was our Yerusha. Do us a favor, don't bid against us. They went to the goyim that were there bidding, and they told them, by the way, this property used to be ours, we're telling you it's all wetlands. There's nothing you can do with it. So what happened? Nobody bid against them, and they got it at 10 cents on the dollar. Now the problem over here was, that it was one brother bought it, and after the auction, the other brother said, I'll pay you half the money, I want to retain half of the share of the property. So the Rechaim first deals with the fact that it was sold at 10 cents on the dollar. Is that a reason to void the sale? So he says, and again, the Rechaim is talking about the laws in Sanz. I don't know if they apply today in the United States. He says, first of all, this wasn't real collusion. To tell a Yid not to interfere with another Yid, that's not collusion. If you want a property to warn your competitors that it's wetlands, everyone does that. So the first thing he says is not called collusion. Second of all, he says he knows the laws were, there's nothing wrong with buyers colluding at an auction. It seems back then in Sanz, their philosophy was, just like the sellers have the right, there's a seller's union and they can collude to set the prices, they have a seller's cartel. So there's nothing wrong with setting up a buyer's cartel. And there's nothing wrong with making a heskim what you will bid or what you won't bid. And therefore, the Rebbe Chaim says it's a matter of halacha, the mekach is chal, and you can't overturn it. Now Riaz Enzel in Siman Daled argues, presumably he didn't live in Sanz, there the laws were a bit different, there the collusion was enough to void the auction, And there he says, if there was collusion, if they were playing games, and because of that it went at below market value, the original owner would have a claim and would be able to undo the sale. Now, this whole discussion is when there's a property, it was foreclosed on, and it's being sold. So here we have a question of the Beis Ephraim, the Beis Chaim, how to deal with the auction. What happens in a slightly different case? Where the question is not, someone is not foreclosing on the property. Someone is buying debt. A Yisroel owed money to an Akum. The guy, for whatever reason, is selling off the debt. And someone else wants to go ahead and buy it. How do we deal with such situations? So very briefly, there is another in the Ktsois in Siman Kuf Tzadi brings down a takana dalet aratzos that there was a takana not to buy debt that a yid owned the guy without getting permission from the debtor. The takana dalet aratzos, in fact, it was back then if a person violated it, he wouldn't be able to collect. That was the halacha. Now, although this is brought down by the Ktsois, the Sam Sofer and the Divrei Chaim both say that the United States is not one of the Dalet Aratzos, and that this takana applies only in areas where it spread and where it was accepted. Any place else, if it's not the minhag, if the takana did not spread, you're not down to this halacha, and therefore the Isser would not apply. There's a second issue of Dina de Bar Metzra, which again, just very briefly, there is a halacha that if a property is sold, the neighbor gets first rights, and he has the right to force the buyer to sell it to him. The Ma'abit in Chelek Basin in Kuf Mem Dalet says the same way it applies to a property, it applies to a debt as well. If I owe someone money, and the lender sells the debt, so the debtor has the right to buy it off this outside investor at cost price. He's a Bar Metzra. Just like if you have a property, you have rights on the property next door to you, since you're the one that owes the money, if the debt is sold, you have the right to claim it. Although this is the Psak of Ma'abit, however, the Shach and Siman Kuf Ayin Hei and many of later Achroinim argue. And they say, L'halakha L'maisa, there's no Din of a Metzra, this won't apply. However, based on what we learned today, although there's no Din of a Metzra, L'chayra we have our Sugiv Animat B'charar. That if the debtor was trying to buy this lien, was trying to buy this debt, and someone goes ahead and buys it, you would have, according to this Beis Ephraim, the debtor would be able to claim money in Bahapach, and you'd be able to force him to sell it to him. The Rechaim in Chelek Beis Siman Vav says in Mufurish, he had a case where his case was actually a yid owed money to a guy, the yid defaulted, the guy sued him. Now what happens if you get sued in court and you can't pay back the debt? They threw you in debtor's prison. So that's what happened. The yid ended up in prison. The guy, once the yid's in prison, he has no leverage, so he gave up. So what happened? Another yid went ahead, went to the guy and offered him a couple of pennies on the dollar, and bought the debt off him. This second yid knew where the first yid was hiding all of his assets, and he went ahead and started going after these assets. And the shaila is, does he have the right to do that? Zot Divrei Chaim, nothing doing. Divrei Chaim says, Ein al-chana, he says like this. The guy had already given up on the debt. So he says, if the guy is trying to collect the debt from the yid, and the yid is draining him a cup in a way that's a chilul Hashem, so if you have a way to prevent the chilul Hashem, if you want to buy the debt, you want to take care of things yourself, so brings down a bera goyla, not a problem. However, in this case, the yid already defaulted. He's in jail. Whatever chilul Hashem may have been caused, if it was a chilul Hashem, was done already. By you buying it and collecting it, you're not making a kiddush Hashem. Then you're making it worse. Now the meicher is going to realize that he just did in the guy, but now that the yid bought it, he pays up. It's a bigger chilul Hashem. Therefore, the Divrei Chaim says you're pasha a mazik. Since the debt was already charged off, it wasn't being collected. Through your actions, you're forcing this yid to pay. He says you're a mazik and you can't collect. Not only are you a mazik, he says, is on mahapik as well. Just like the Beis Ephraim says, if you own the merchandise and it gets sold in a lien, in a tax sale, you have the first claim. He says it clear by a debt, the halacha will be the same, and therefore you would have every right to go ahead and to force him to return it. He says you should pay him back, you should reimburse this investor for what he actually paid the guy, but more than that, he's not entitled to. So halacha l'mayis, it'll come out like this. If you're going to an auction, you're buying debt that's already charged off. Here we have this Divrei Chaim, there's a Shelas Yaivit, Simon Lamed Ches, Lamed Tes, says a similar verse. You're going to have a problem. You're not going to be able to collect more than you actually paid for it. On the other hand, if the debt is owed, and the borrower is busy draying the lender in a way which is perhaps can cause a Chil Hashem, there the Divrei Chaim brings down from the Ber HaGoyla that it could be fakir, it could be a mitzvah to go ahead, buy off the debt, and collect whatever you can to avoid this person going ahead and doing something which would be a Chil Hashem. On the other hand, if you're dealing with a piece of property, if a person owned a property and the property was already foreclosed upon, if it was foreclosed upon in a legitimate manner, there l'chay will have a question of upstate the moicher. We can't apply ani mahapach because then the seller will lose out, and therefore al pashtus ani mahapach will not apply, and it's going to be very difficult to be moitzi mamon even with this base of frayim. Institutions ultimately are owned by people. Unless you're dealing with, it's a corporation, it's a public company, it's owned by the shareholders. So there's a person, there's a live body that's losing.
And it's owned by the municipality?
For the people, by the people, of the people. It's, ultimately, you or your children are going to pay for it eventually. Yes, that's the Ramah. Ramah says very clearly that by Ayim HaHapach, even if the seller is a guy, say them, it will not apply until there's a psikas domin because of psikas domin.
Would this prohibit a Jew from going to the collection agency business to go out to other Jews to buy debt and that's usually what they do?
Possibly. It is a factor. You'll have to figure out if, in most cases, it's not relevant because the owners, the guy, did not give up on the debt and they're still going to collect it. And if they're going to collect it, it's a question of which collection agency they're going to have collecting it. You'll have that other Divrei Chaim in Siman Memches that it could be it's not a problem. In a case where it's dead, it's charged off, and if you don't do anything, it just won't be collected, there the Divrei Chaim is saying there's something very problematic with buying it. Now, hold on, just to close off, to go back to the case that we started off with. In the case where a person bought a package of loans, so what would be over there? And then a yid pops up and says, you had no right to buy this debt. So what would be the halacha? Anybody? So l'chayra? What?
Collect what you paid for it.
Right. Now over here, there's one other factor. And that is, by Ani Ma'ab B'Charara, the Chikrei Levinson and Kuf Lam and Gimel says, sorry, Kuf Yud Gimel, that Ani Ma'ab applies, I want to buy a piece of property. Someone else comes along and wants to buy the same property. If I was there first, ani mahapach. What happens if I'm negotiating to buy a piece of property? I want to buy a certain lot. Another person comes into the developer and says, I'll buy the whole development from you. Is there ani mahapach in that case? No. It's based primarily on Seyed and Moicher. Since I'm just trying to be Mahapach on one property, you're looking at a whole group of properties, so my Ani Mahapach can't prevent you from buying the whole package. So going back to that first case, where the person had bought an entire package of loans, this package included Jews, non-Jews, everything mixed in together. Here, the owners, this one Yid's Ani Mahapach, can't go ahead and be a taina on the whole package, and the chayra he wouldn't be able to win. Again, unless you're mechadish and say the base of Ephraim svara will apply here as well, that since he had shaychus, but again, that's really a chiddush to add to the base of Ephraim, it would need a raya, and I don't think he would prevail in being moitzi mamon. By checking in the second case we discussed, where there were two partners, both of them were being mahapach, they both wanted to buy the debt, in that case, there clearly would be ani mahapach harara. And this partner that went ahead and tried to buy it behind his other partner's back would probably ultimately end up losing. Mechusar Amar applies again. Ani Mahapach is always dealing between the two buyers. The second buyer has to leave it to the first because Ani Mahapach. Mechusar Amar is an issue between the seller and the first buyer. If he already made a commitment, he can't go ahead. So it's true. You'll have.
Well,
oh, in that case, yeah. there's a host of problems. There's mechus amonor, there's shlichus over here. If you send a shliach to buy something and then he says he bought it for himself, it could be he's not nemo, because it's worse than mechus amonor. It's nikra rama. It's the gemara beforehand in condition.
In the case where a person bought back some debt from a buyer, that debt has some interest in it. When he buys it, he's acting to blow his debt interest.
Excellent question. The interest that accrued before the purchase, that was already accrued, it was already on the books, that's fine. Because that interest that was between the yid and the guy, that is now the principal of what you bought. Any interest going forward is a problem, which is an important factor when people buy these packages of debt. So if their point is there's enough equity, they want to just foreclose on the property, that they can do. But if they're going to try to force the debtor to pay, they cannot collect any interest that accrues from the moment they buy it and on. But the old debt is not a problem.
They have made the loan.
That's true. But the moment you buy the loan, they become it's now their loan. It's accruing interest on their watch. It's owed to them, and you have a problem.
In case with the original owner has a tie-down, and the guy who buys the package just to sell him has to give back at his cost. He comes from and says, "Yeah, you can give him to do it. Does he have a right to be compensated for what he defined that it took him?"
Probably. The Rechaim says he's like a yoyrid. You know, if he went ahead and you owed $50 million, and through this person's actions and negotiations, there's only $16 million divided by two, he created value. So you'd have to reimburse him for the efforts and for the value that he created. How much it would have cost to hire someone else to create that value? And that's correct. If he had the right to do what he did, he will likely be compensated for that. Okay. Thank you.